Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Things Therapy. I'm your host, Lisa Tahir. I'm a licensed clinical social worker practicing as an intuitive psychotherapist. I would love to connect with you as my listener, and you can do that two ways. You can go directly to my website, which is nolatherapy.com. It's the abbreviation for New Orleans, Los Angeles Therapy. NOLA therapy.com, or you can go through my LA Talk Radio show page at latalkradio.com. And from there, you're able to book sessions to work with me individually. If you're in a relationship, I work with many couples and I work with you. I'm available in person in Los Angeles or New Orleans, additionally by phone, Skype, or FaceTime, anywhere that you are located. I'd love for you to reach out if you're interested in being a guest on this show. And please keep subscribing and rating my show, All Things Therapy, on iTunes, on Google Play. I'm on iHeartRadio as of about a month ago. And on YouTube, I have a channel called NOLA Therapy that I'd love for you to subscribe to, where the shows are available as well. And please support this work that I do in a co-creation with each and every guest through the crowdfunding campaign I have with Patreon. That website is patreon.com/allthingstherapy. My guest today was on the show a couple of years ago with the first book he and his daughter put out. And now we are about to be for a second time with Mark Trider. He is a father, a corporate attorney, author of two books now, with his daughter, Leanna, who's been a contributor to both books. We're going to talk about both of them today. The first book is titled, My Dad is an Alcoholic. What About Me? A Preteen Guide to Conquering Addictive Genes. The second book that they have recently put out is called Alcohol, Drugs, and You, A Young Person's Guide to Avoiding Addiction. And Mark himself is a recovering alcoholic with 9 years of sobriety, and he's authentic, is well-versed in addictions, and he and his family want to reach young people before they find themselves in a pattern of dependency or addiction. Welcome back, Mark.
Thanks for having me, and very well said.
You're welcome. Thank you for taking your time out. How are you today?
Doing good. Kids are on summer break. My daughter went to her first job today, so that as a father, that's a very good thing.
That's awesome. Fantastic. Yeah, where do you want to start with our listeners today on the work that you have been doing and putting your books out and speaking to young people and adults alike?
You know, there's a lot of different facets of the book, but you mentioned it. Our goal is to try to get to kids before it's too late, because prevention is a lot easier than rehabilitation in the addiction world. Rehabilitation getting sober off drugs or opiates or alcohol, as you can watch any day on the news, or TMZ, it's very difficult. The percentages are very low. But, abstaining from drugs and alcohol, it's done by billions of people around the world for their entire life. So we're trying to get some information out to kids, in their early teens, especially those that might have it in their DNA. But others, too, because it's just a worldwide epidemic. We're trying to give them some tools and tips. And half the book's written, from a teenager. So to give them the actual teen perspective on maybe some tips that they might remember, during peer pressure and in high school.
Yeah. How is the work being received by teenagers, by adolescents?
We get a lot of great feedback. the most frequent feedback, adult, teens, anybody is, wow, my family needs this. It's amazing going through this, you know, promoting the book and talking to people and helping people, realizing that I'd honestly say 90 to 95% of the people I talk with, even just, you know, in my professional career, when I tell them about the book, they all have somebody that either an immediate family member or a cousin or an aunt or a best friend that, that needs this. So it's amazing and scary at the same time to see, you know, how pervasive this is across our country.
So I'm wondering, I have a lot of friends with teenage kids now, and how do you even begin this discussion with the adolescent, the young person that might be reluctant? I don't know many teenagers that are going to say, oh yeah, mom and dad, like my friends, we're drinking and doing drugs or experimenting. How do you kind of broach the subject even to start to educate?
Yeah, we suggest bringing it up before high school. So the average age is getting younger. Of experimentation and alcohol use in high school or even earlier.
I think it's 13, right? Yeah, as young as 13.
Every time they do a study, it gets younger. So the most recent study I saw was 13. It used to be 14. It used to be 15. So it's getting younger. The pills and the joints and bottles of booze are easier to get. We suggest starting it early, you know, back in the
50s. Like what age would you say?
11 and 12.
Okay, sure. That's good to know.
So you can do a couple things. First of all, start talking about it like your parents did, you know, about sex ed with my generation, or the birds and the bees, or AIDS or STDs. You know, it was one of those things you had. Every mother and father had to talk to their kids about the birds and the bees. What, when they're like 11 or 12? You know, now what's more likely to kill them, an STD or an overdose on heroin? And it's not even close. The statistics aren't close. So make that a priority.
What are some of the, like in educating kids about, you know, when they encounter alcohol and drugs, can you help us understand some of the ways that you've used and that you're teaching parents to use with their kids? Just some takeaway points?
Yeah, and we, the book has a lot of these things. It has a chapter on peer pressure and some tips and some things you can just push back with. You know, for example, the cover of the book has a peanut and a potato to try to make it relatable to, you know, 12-year-olds. And the peanut represents a peanut allergy. So everybody listening to this the station knows somebody with a peanut allergy, right? And that entire family knows about it. All the friends know about it. The soccer coach, the parents on the soccer team, the flight attendant on the airplane.
Yeah.
Everybody knows there's an allergy to peanuts. He just tells them, I can't have peanuts. Keep peanuts away from me. We try to make the analogy that, hey, alcoholism and addiction is also an allergy. It's something many people are born with. It's in their DNA. If they start drinking in college, they're going to become an alcoholic. Treat it like the allergy that it is. If you, you know, and if you understand that and you embrace it and you talk about it as a family, then maybe when that kid gets offered a, you know, a pill in junior college or someone hands them a beer, they say, hey, I have addiction in my genes. I won't touch this stuff. Be the proud potato, just like kids with peanut allergies. Talk about it openly.
Well, and I know you talk in your work as well about what parents model at home are kind of those foundational building blocks of the decisions that their kids will be making. And so I'd like to give as many practical steps to our listeners that they can, you know, get off the show, order your book, and just implement while it's on its way. For instance, like, you know, being aware of how alcohol is used in your own home. Like, is a parent coming home every night and having a drink? Are they? Can you talk to us more about that?
Yeah, look, we all, like it or not, we're role models for our kids, right? And if you don't think you are, you're wrong, because you are. Kids look up to you. They copy your actions, your reactions. You know, parents, kids turn out like their parents most of the time. So you have to ask yourself, you know, why do you have alcohol if you do at most of your family events? Wouldn't you have friends over? Why is there always wine on the table? If you go to a beach barbecue for your niece's birthday, you know, in many families, alcohol revolves around everything. Birthday parties, brunches. Why do you really need to drink mimosas in front of your kids at a brunch? I know this contributed to part of my drinking. You know, alcohol was part of my family's history, and they're half Irish and half Russian, and there were grand tales about drunken behavior, and it, you know, in a way, my family promoted it, you know, with glorified the, you know, the tales of the uncle that, you know, threw a kid out of a classroom when he was a substitute teacher and drunk, or whatever the story was. Your kids are gonna look at that drinking and think it's normal or even glorified. So our suggestion is, when your kids are around, don't have alcohol. Just like you probably don't have cigarettes now, you know, compared to 30 years ago. Nobody smokes. I mean, hardly anybody smokes around their kids anymore. Don't drink around your kids. That, you know, in 20 years we might be talking about drinking as you know, as people are, you know, the change
with smoking
in the last 20 years. Yeah.
You know, go on, and then I'll say.
No, I was going to say, and one other thing, we also have a, we call it Potato Talk. We also have a webcast where we interview some, our first couple that we've done, we just started, were professional athletes. And the first two that we interviewed were, it's a good message and a good comparison for kids. One, our first one is a current NFL star, and he had a severely alcoholic father, and it was all through his genes. And he made the decision at an early age never to touch the stuff, to talk about it, to tell people, no way, man, I'm not going to drink, to be that guy at the party to say, I don't need to drink to have fun. And he's an NFL star now and very sober and happy. And the second person we interviewed was an NHL star, a hockey star. But he didn't make that choice early on to stay away from drugs and alcohol, even though it was all throughout his family. And you can see, although he's still around and he's trying to help people with that are also suffering, you can just see the struggles that he's had in the last 30 years compared to, you know, our NFL player that made the decision, you know, when he was 10 or 11 years old, watching his dad, that he would never touch a drink again.
What you're saying is causing me to think about how I think it's important the role models that kids have. A good friend of mine is a former Olympian in gymnastics, and because she still performs, though not at the Olympic level, she's never drank because she needed her body to be her best tool in competition. And I think if kids have role models like certain professional athletes that don't use alcohol because of the debilitating effects to the body, that could be something positive. So I imagine, yep, you know, helping your kids to have really great role models could be a part of them, like having someone to look up to, as we all need. We all look up to somebody doing better or who we want to become. So I think that could be important too in kids' development.
Yeah, it is. And especially, you know, like, let's be honest, Justin Bieber's probably not the best role model or, you know, a lot of these rock stars.
Right.
So pick a different one. Pick Kenny Wiggins, the NFL guy that we interviewed, or find a sober role model. Or, you know what, this person's extremely controversial, but look at President Trump compared to his brother. His brother died of alcoholism. President Trump, like him or not, he's never had a drink, and he's president of the United States. It's one guy's dead from alcohol, and one guy is the most, you know, the free
powerful
leader,
man
of the free world. Yeah.
Yes. You know, what this topic I think is really appropriate right now. I recently wrote an article for the LA Hub magazine about millennials and alcoholism. And as you probably know, millennials have the highest rate of alcoholism of any generation that's come up. And they have actually shaped the way that alcohol is packaged and sold, meaning that now there are Starbucks, there are other coffee shops that not only sell coffee, like when we grew up, but they have wine. And there's delivery services that will have alcohol to your door within 2 hours. And the memes and social media are different. They reflect alcohol and just the overconsumption, while at the same time, millennials know how unhealthy and damaging alcohol can be. And now millennials have their own kids. They're starting to have their own children. So have you and your daughter had, you know, any experience, particularly in speaking with millennials and how this message might affect and impact them in a positive way?
Yeah, and I have one additional example that I witnessed myself, and I was horrified, and I'm happy to say this, and I hope the owners of the company are listening. I was at the House of Blues for a concert, and I live in California, so where marijuana was recently legalized. I was at the House of Blues for a concert a couple weeks ago, and there was a company that set up a kiosk to sell marijuana next to the bar.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So accessibility is just right there.
Yeah. Credit cards, cash right next to the bar. They were selling marijuana. People listening might be okay with marijuana. I'm not. I'm focusing on trying to keep addiction away. So, yeah, now marijuana can be bought anywhere in California. You could probably get it delivered. Yeah, I mean, the millennials live on their phone. You know, they're, if they could just push a button and have alcohol delivered, or, you know, that absolutely contributes to things. And
so I think that education is the key, as you're doing.
But there's, you know, stopping it before it happens is definitely has a higher success rate than rehabilitation or mm-hmm. changing behavior. There's only been one real study on it. I actually want to try to work with some researchers to do additional studies. But the one study out of New York State took a whole bunch of kids whose parents had drug issues, and they educated one set of kids about the dangers of alcohol and drugs. And, you know, if you try it in high school, you might become addicted for life and lose everything. Just compared to the other group of kids where they didn't say anything. And it was like a 300% increase in drug and alcohol use for the set that didn't have the information.
So wow. That
sort of backs up, you know, our theory. Give them at least a fighting chance. So somebody knows just, you know, quote, experimenting with alcohol at a party or pills, you know, you might not ever turn away from that. That's the problem.
Yes. So how did you get sober, Mark?
I was lucky enough after years of wanting to quit. So when people want to quit, they can't quit. that's what's very ironic about this disease, and some people never learn it. But let's say after 10 years of knowing I had a huge drinking problem and wanting to quit, I still wasn't able to. My daughter, she just said one sentence to my wife about me that threw me into my quote rock bottom, and then I asked to go to rehab. It was as simple as I took Leanna to a concert, an American Idol concert or something. I was excited about a daddy daughter evening. We got home and my wife said, "Leanna, how was the concert?" And she said, "Daddy drank a lot."
Mm.
And for me, when I heard that, thank God that did it for me. You know, subconsciously that tore me apart, and that's all I needed. And then 3 days later, I asked some coworkers to take me to rehab. So thankfully I had that moment. You know, there was a lot of other moments in my life that certainly should have been the bottom and caused me to ask for help, but that's not how this disease works. A lot of people never ask for help. And some people, you know, it takes a divorce or a DUI or the boss firing him, or, you know, it's hard to predict what causes someone to want to get help more than they want that next drink.
Well, and what has helped you maintain sobriety? Because it's one thing to get yourself to treatment or a 12-step program or whatever modality one goes to, but what has kept you sober for 9 years?
You know, and it's a good question, because a lot of people, even after rehab, the relapse rates are like 75%. Which is scary. Which is, again, why we say don't ever start, because even going to a rehab doesn't fix all the people. That's a good question. At first, it was listening to what the experts told me and not questioning anything, because I'm very, as a lot of alcoholics and drug addicts are, we're very stubborn. We're very self-centered. We like to make our own decisions and direction. That doesn't work with this program. Whatever the counselors at the rehab or your sponsor at AA or your addiction counselor tell you to do, just do it. I just did that without questioning anything for years. I can tell you what helps now is having two books out with my name on it about being an alcoholic and being on radio shows like yours and WGN next week with my daughter. Certainly would make a difficult time promoting a book if I relapsed. So that's definitely part of the benefit of this book is keeping the memories fresh is really a key. When your mind, you know, when people relapse, they say, "Well, I thought I could handle it," but if they really thought back to, you know, passing out in their underwear in a gutter, you know, they remember that they really couldn't. But when those memories get so distant, your brain sort of jumps in and tells you can handle it. So me talking about things like this and having a book, that certainly helps.
So what I hear you talking about is actually having an accountability partner, so to speak, in your book and in your work and in every interview you do, that the more you self-identify with recovering from alcoholism, it's reinforcing to keep you recovering, because you're being accountable and building in those parameters.
For sure. And, you know, one thing odd that I did between the time that I asked two of my coworkers in Las Vegas to take me to rehab and when I went, is I emailed everybody I knew and told them I was an alcoholic and going to rehab. And it was at some, you know, some level, it was for the accountability. So I wanted the accountability subconsciously or consciously, and it certainly worked for me. And I think that's definitely a tool in the sobriety quiver, is being accountable.
So if someone's listening right now and thinking, wow, like they know they have a problem, what would you suggest for them?
Very simple. Go get help. You can't do it on your own. And if anybody, I've learned this, it's almost 100%. If anybody listening thinks they have a problem or thinks their family member has a problem, they do. Because you hide things so well that if you let enough out where your spouse thinks you're an alcoholic, with hiding 90% of it, that your spouse is definitely an alcoholic. So if you think you have a problem, you think your loved one has a problem, you have to do something about it. You have to send them to AA. You have to go to rehab. You have to talk about it. Lisa, you know this, but a lot of people don't. The addiction is progressive.
Mm-hmm.
It gets worse. You can almost map it. You can almost you can almost map the destruction and what's going to happen. I did an intervention with a close friend on a close friend of mine a couple years ago with his whole family. And I mapped out almost to the T, unfortunately, what was going to happen. I said, if you don't stay sober, you're going to lose your wife. You're going to lose your kids. Then you're going to lose your C-level job at a public company, which is a very high-level job. Then you're going to be home alone in an apartment drinking. And that's where he is today. And that's pretty much what happens to all addicts and alcoholics. It gets worse month after month, year after year, and at the end there's just burying the person.
Well, addiction wants to be a primary relationship with you. It wants to take over and become everything. And how would you speak to the person that the difference between abuse, say alcohol abuse, substance abuse, and then dependence and addiction?
That's a good question. You know, there's a couple answers. Well, the Alcoholics Anonymous book, which was written in the 30s, which is still amazing.
Big book. Yeah.
All of us that read the big book, it's like they wrote it about us. It's incredible. But there's in there they say, well, if you don't think you're an alcoholic, go to your local bar every night for a couple weeks and have two beers. See if you can only have two beers for those few weeks. The answer is usually no.
It's progressive.
Yeah, it's hard. Once an alcoholic starts drinking, it's almost impossible to not have that next drink. That's really the test. So when you have the first drink and you're at the Dave and Buster's with your family, do you always have more? Can you stop yourself? Or another way to think about it in terms of your weekly existence is, do you need alcohol or do you just want to drink? So, you know, my wife, we're going to a concert tonight, and we're going to dinner before the concert. If she wanted a glass of wine, she probably could have one. If I was back in my drinking days and we were going to this concert, I would make sure we were going to a restaurant nearby with a lot of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would make sure if there's no alcohol at the concert that I would sneak some in.
Right.
So you need, when you get to the point where you're planning your events to make sure you have alcohol, to make sure, you know, when you're in the airport, you stop by the airport bar. When it turns from a want to a need, there's definitely a problem. And it's probably too late to turn the switch off, unfortunately. Once that addiction switch gets turned on in your brain, it doesn't go off forever. You can stay sober, but the addiction switch doesn't go off.
So the role between of genetics versus environment as it relates to addictions. How would you speak to our listeners about that?
Excuse me. Obviously, there's been studies on it. And some of the top studies say it's about half and half. You know, I think they're both important. If you if you as a parent fail on, if you either one are a failure, then it's probably going to end up in, with an addicted child. So if you're, you know, if you're letting your child run wild and drink and not, and you're drinking in front of them and alcohol is normal in your house, it's a real good chance they're going to develop an alcohol problem. Similarly, if their dad was an alcoholic and grandpa and uncle and you let them drink, it's really likely they're going to become an alcoholic. It's like, it can be for a boy with addiction in their genes and they start drinking early, they can be up to 20 times more likely, if you look at all the contributing factors, than their buddy sitting next to him in the classroom to become an alcoholic.
Yeah. So
First of all, you have to assume it's in their genes because not everybody knows. If your parents are not alcoholics, it does not mean it's not in your genes. It could be your
right. It could have been a grandparent. And I think you can get some of that information and just sitting around as you're growing up, talking to your family members and hearing stories and such.
Try, yeah. We suggest in the book, why don't you just assume it's in your genes? Because it's in a significant number of families out there. Just assume it's in your genes. Assume grandpa had it. And, don't take those pain pills when you get your wisdom teeth out instead of Tylenol. Just, our suggestion is assume it's in your genes. Act like it. Try to abstain for drugs and alcohol, and then you won't have a lifelong battle to keep the addiction from coming back.
Mark, let's take a quick pause to a commercial break and come right back in just a minute.
Indeed, listening is the new reading. With Audible, you can listen to an unlimited amount of books at home, in your car, at the gym, anywhere on the go. With over 180,000 audiobooks to choose from. For you, the listener of all things therapy, Audible is offering you a free audiobook download and a month-long subscription for you to try them out. Visit audibletrial.com/allthingstherapy now. And enjoy.
Do you want to help yourself and friends find a purpose in life?
Then you are in the right place and be a part of the crowdfunding campaign of patreon.com/allthingstherapy.
With Lisa Tahir as she initiates a one-on-one interaction with inspiring authors, healing experts, and spiritual directors.
Join the League of Heroes of this generation by contributing your quota between $1 up to $100 per month
at patreon.com/allthingstherapy.
And let's make the world free of suicide, poverty, depression, and in all, make the world a better place for everyone.
We're with Mark Trider, author of two books, My Dad is an Alcoholic, What About Me? A Preteen Guide to Conquering Addictive Genes, and Alcohol, Drugs, and You, A Young Person's Guide to Avoiding Addiction. And Mark, I just asked, what do you think are some of the reasons that young people succumb to substance abuse and alcohol abuse?
Man, that's a good question. And certainly one is peer pressure, whether it's, your kids all wanting to wear the same shoes as the other kids, or nowadays the short shorts the girls all like to wear because their peers are wearing it. When they go to parties and see, quote, the popular kids or the older kids drinking alcohol, and they say, hey, kid, try a beer. There's certainly a lot of that. We have a chapter on peer pressure. My daughter has some really good ideas to fight up against that. And what we talked about, you're watching your parents, whether they're just social drinkers or whether, your mom's a raging alcoholic and pill user your entire life, and that's all you witness growing up. There's going to be some point where that's normalized in your brain, and either out of anger or weakness or temptation or just the fact that it's around, that could cause you to drink.
So how can we support our youth around this topic? Because certainly there are many people that have a healthy relationship with alcohol. They have a glass of wine with dinner and they're fine. It does not bleed over into dependence, abuse, and addiction. How can we support our kids with educating them how to manage, alcohol that is available in our culture and just everywhere in the world?
Yeah, well, our approach, to be honest, is more of don't try anything.
That's more abstinence.
Yes, but you know, there's a lot of reasons that a life of abstinence is going to be better than a potential life of addiction. We're just trying to reframe the thought process on that. But certainly, you're right. There's plenty of people that can drink normally. You know, we certainly recommend that adolescents or teenagers under the legal drinking age don't drink at all.
Right.
They're much more likely to become alcoholics the earlier they drink. So mm-hmm. if you want to say to your kids, fine, you can drink when you're 21, but not before then. For families without addiction in their genes, that might be appropriate. It's really, you know, about communication with the children. You know, you got to talk to them about this issue. You can't rely on the public school teacher or the private school teacher or the counselors or their friends to talk to them. It's really a topic that we're trying to make open around the dinner table.
How, when you were active in your addiction, how was your daughter affected? I know she's talked about this, written about this, to give some of our listeners just from her perspective, from a child's perspective.
Yeah, and reading the book, the first time I read it and reading the second book and hearing her speak is when I really realized that. We alcoholics and parents or drug addicts and parents really think we're hiding things from the kids. Kids are smart, especially my daughter. Mm-hmm. She's really smart. She picked up on things. There's some language in there about she used to cover her ears when she heard mommy and daddy, you know, daddy was drunk fighting late at night. They hear things. They notice things. I think the thing that tore me up the most when I read it was daddy became a lot. It became really distracted and distant. And that's true. And she was, you know, this was when she was, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. So she picked up on things. If you're listening and, you know, you're out drinking and coming home drunk or from a work party or someone's carrying you from a nightclub back up to your room and your kids are there, they notice these things.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta assume they're going to notice it.
Yes, definitely. So just being an addiction, it makes an individual blind to their own contributions, their own behavior, even. So I think definitely in your case, it helped when you heard your daughter say that to your wife after the concert, that what she remembers about it is you drinking, not the performer performing. So I think it was a blessing that happened for you then to realize that that's not what you want moving forward in your life. And that's not how you want to affect your kids anymore.
Yeah. You know, for me, one of my primary focus, even during my drinking, I was always most focused on my kids. So when it turned out I wasn't able to hide it from my kids, which looking back, it wasn't a surprise, that really tore me up. You know, similar things happen for, you know, people just trying to hide it from their spouse or their girlfriend or their boss. And when that comes out, it can be a turning point. So we tell people when I talk to kids or my daughter does, or adults or friends, say something, because we know what happens when no one says anything.
Mm-hmm.
Then dad's in jail for DUIs or dad just lost his liver and he's dead. So say something. Look, in my story, my daughter said one little comment about a concert, and here I am talking to you 9 years later.
Well, what about for a family where there might be more fear? How would you suggest that those kids might deal with, you know, noticing things aren't right with mom or dad, but feeling scared about bringing it up?
No, that's a good point. My daughter has some suggestions in the book on that. Find a cousin that you talk to. How about an aunt, a priest? Most kids have a trusted adult, and mm-hmm. often if not their parents. You know, they have an aunt that's the one that they go to concerts with or that they talk to about their boyfriend and instead of their mom. Find someone to talk to and say something. You can also, we take questions and give advice on our website, which we'll give out in a minute. But reach out to us. Reach out to Leanna. Reach out to somebody.
That's awesome.
You know, it's very difficult for kids, not only do they see the behavior, they always start to think it's their fault, which, you know, obviously as an adult looking back, it's never a kid's fault that their dad's addicted to Oxycontin and the mom's an alcoholic, but that's what kids think. So getting kids with the help of this book or other things. And you know, if you know your sister is an alcoholic and her son's being raised in a dangerous environment, do something.
And before we're done today, I want you to talk to us about your foundation, the Red Rosebud Foundation.
Yeah, we're doing this entire book process just to help kids. It's not to make money. Fortunately, I have a good job for that. so, and we're taking we started getting a lot of donors, some corporate donors, some personal donors. It's a 501(c). So donations are accepted. You can even on our website specify where you want the donation to go to. For example, we have a 500 books going to Juvenile Hall here locally.
That's awesome.
That's from a corporate donor. And then my daughter is actually going to go talk at Juvenile Hall and some other places around San Diego County and Southern California where kids might need some help. So, yeah, we welcome donations. The money goes straight to books to donate to kids that are in need. And, you know, if we can help one more kid tomorrow avoid a lifelong battle with alcohol or opiates, then we've done our job.
Absolutely. And this book, the book writing was a family affair. You and Leanna wrote the book together, and then your wife and son did the illustrations. I'm thinking that had to have been immensely healing. And can you talk to our listeners about some of those amazing and beautiful moments that you had together through this journey?
Yeah, and we still continue to have them. You're right. Working with your son and daughter and openly discussing your alcoholism and your recovery, it's pretty special. And then, you know, we're sitting on NBC on a morning program with the host interviewing my daughter about her advice for teens to not drink. It's very touching and special. And next week she's speaking to a group of kids at the YMCA whose parents are in prison about what they can do to maybe to avoid a life of addiction and alcoholism. So, yeah, it's been a very special thing for the family, and we've seen some other families get involved in it too, and it's a very good thing.
And your daughter is 17 now, so that's really amazing that she's out there speaking to these kind of audiences at her age.
Yeah, it is. In fact, my publicist asked asked my daughter if she wanted me to go with her to the YMCA event Monday where she's speaking to adults, and she said, "Nah, Dad, I'm good." So that's
fantastic.
It's plus, with all these appointments, she doesn't have a lot of time for dating. So that's also a benefit.
Right. For you as her father. It's like, woo, dodging that bullet for a little longer.
That's true.
So what do you hope that kids and their parents take away from your books?
A couple things. First of all, we want to make it something that families talk about. In my research for the book, I interviewed and I know tons of alcoholics and addicts, obviously. And many of those had addiction in their families for generations. And the one thing I heard from almost all of them was, my parents never talked to me about any of this. You know, whether mom and dad were addicts, Uncle Joe died of liver failure. In my family, it's just littered with drug addicts and alcoholics. And my parents are great and educated, and they didn't tell me any of this. So we want it to be a topic of discussion. If you're going to talk about the birds and the bees, you better talk about, you know, the opiate epidemic, which kills more people now than car accidents. Mm-hmm. So that's goal one, make it something families talk about. And then goal two is simply to give kids, you know, 4 to 5 tools and pieces of information they understand that can help them stay away from peer pressure and drugs and alcohol, and that they know the danger of, you know, taking OxyContin, that they can become addicted in 48 hours, giving them tools and the ammunition to fight off the disease.
Yes.
Because
so
once
how,
it hits, yeah, it's really yeah. hard. Once it you is. Have the addiction, it's a lifelong battle, and most people are not successful. I'm fortunate enough today, currently, to be an exception to that rule, but the rule generally in the statistics are, once people really become addicted to drugs or alcohol, most of them die.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, yes. So education at a young age and support. Kids need our support. to come to us when they're struggling with these issues too, I think, and having open communication about what is going on in school, in their peer groups, what they're exposed to, so that they're not alone making these decisions.
Yeah, and if it's not you, which is difficult as a parent, identify Aunt Sally. Identify somebody and tell them when they're 10 or 11 and have that person over. Hey, if you ever have peer pressure at school, talk to my best friend, Jackie. She'll be happy to talk to you, because kids are often scared to tell their parents anything. But Aunt Jackie, if you know that you can go to Aunt Jackie when you have a question about a boy or a question about peer pressure with drugs or alcohol, set that channel of communication early.
Expectation and openness.
Yeah, make sure they know where to go, and it's not just some Snapchat with a friend in college for advice. Make sure
right.
they have a responsible adult that they're comfortable talking with, and make sure they know that they can talk to them about anything.
Yes. So how can listeners reach out to you, to your daughter, Leanna? How can people find you and get your books and learn more?
They can just go to potatoallergy.com, just like it sounds. There you can submit questions for us or some other people that we have that help answer. You can view our webcast that we talked about. We're filming an interesting one next week with an addiction researcher. You can get some free wristbands if your kids want them. And you can click on the Amazon links to order either of the books. So potatoallergy.com. If you need help, if you know somebody that needs help, feel free to reach out to us. We also have all the normal social media, and you can get the links on our to Twitter and Facebook and Instagram on our webpage.
Awesome. Thank you for being with us for a second time, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And
my best to your daughter and your family.
Thank you. You too, and thanks for helping us spread the message.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a good day.
You too. That concludes my show today with Mark Trider, author of My Dad is an Alcoholic, What About Me? And Alcohol, Drugs, and You. Please join me next week for another episode. Happy summer solstice today. And take care. Bye-bye.
Listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir.